Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's episode of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of this show and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network. We're so excited that you've joined us today. If this is your first time, congratulations. We have been on air for about 5 years now and welcome in new listeners all the time. We have thousands of hours worth of interviews for you to listen to on the UR Tennis Network. We have 4 shows currently that air each week. First, on Tuesday morning, we have Parenting Aces with Lisa Goodman Stone. That airs at 10 Central Time. Before I come on the air is the American College Experience, is American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. And Chuck is the head coach out at the Citadel. Then there's my show, the American College Experience. And also on Thursday, we have the Florida High School Coaches Association Perspective Show, which is hosted by John Denise. And so we've got many things going on right now in college tennis. I want to get to those things first before I bring in today's guest. Today's guest comes from the State College of Florida. He is head coach of Clayton Taylor, Jr., and we're going to visit with him here shortly about his program and his successful season. As many of you know, if you're a college tennis fan, we have entered into national championship season. But before I get to that, I want to let you know that the ITA has appointed its new CEO of intercollegiate tennis. Dr. Timothy Russell joins the ITA and will begin July 1st, 2015. He was appointed by a special ITA search committee chaired by the former CEO, David Benjamin, and another executive search firm. He has served on the USTA Collegiate Varsity Chair from 2007 to 2010. He's going to come to the ITA from Arizona State University, where he's been a professor as an educator, and he also has spent time at 2 major Division I schools, Arizona State University, as I mentioned, and the Ohio State University, as well as the University of Rochester, a leading Division III institution. Now, the thing that I like most about this hire is he's got a big-time college experience, and he's got small-time college experience. He's been at Division I tennis and also Division III tennis, so he can bring a lot of information from both sides of this to the ITA on the small college side and then Division I side, because we know that they really operate as 2 entities. The Division I's get a lot of favoritism in the ITA, and the small colleges do get some good treatment from the ITA. I'm not trying to say that they treat those small colleges bad, but we all know that the Division I tennis is where they put a lot of their emphasis. The thing that will be interesting as we've gone through the course of the year is the scheduling changes, and we don't know how Dr. Russell feels about that. He has served, as I mentioned, on the USTA Collegiate Varsity Chair, and he helped put together a strategic plan for the partnership of the USTA with the ITA and Varsity Collegiate Tennis. So he's got some experience there with college tennis. Let's just hope he doesn't bring in a lot of major changes that are happening out there. We'd like to see the conservative approach here to the scoring, not the TV approach, so we'll see what happens. In national championship news, and I'm going to switch gear here, we have our first national champion of the year. The National Junior College Athletic Association hosted its women's championships, and there was a big-time champion out there. We had Coach Brian Slack on prior to the championships at the beginning of the spring season, and we knew that he had a good team, but we didn't know just how good. So he went out to the national championships, which was in Tucson, Arizona this year, and he won all nine flights, scoring 50 points. And we're going to let Clayton explain that as he comes on and tells us about his successful season. TJC finished second, and then Clayton and his team at State College of Florida finished third. The Men's National Championships is in Plano right now, and if you've been a fan of weather, you know that every day it has rained here in Texas for the last, I would say, week to 10 days, and so this has played havoc. They're playing some indoor matches up there as well as outdoor matches when they can. ASA went in with the number one team, TJC the number two team, and they're tied after yesterday with 30 points apiece, and ABAC right behind them at 29 points. So there's a lot of college tennis. I also want to let you know that the Division IIs and the NAIA National Championship started this week as well. We've got those just getting underway. As a matter of fact, Division II starts today, and NAIA heads into its second round today as well. And number one Georgia Gwinnett there at the NAIA seems to be not having much trouble out there. So hopefully we'll get all these college coaches that win these national championships to come on the show and explain their run and how successful their season was. So I think I've got Clayton Taylor on the phone here, so let me see if I can bring him in.
Yes. Hey, Coach, hi, Jason.
Are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Nice to talk to you today. Glad you joined the show. We've got a lot to talk about with your team and your college there. But before we get into all that, Coach Smith, there are going to be a lot of people that listen to this show that have no idea who you are. So can you give us a little bit of biographical information that led you to the State College of Florida?
Okay, yeah. I started off playing when I was like 13. I was a late bloomer. I went to a junior college my freshman year at John C. Calhoun in Alabama, which was where I was from, and played 1 year there, transferred to Auburn University, played my sophomore, junior, and senior years at Auburn, got into college coaching for the next period of 10 years, two as an assistant, and then another is an assistant at UK, and then I went on to be the head coach at Louisiana Tech and Tennessee Tech for a period of six more years. After that, I went and worked with Nick Bollettieri for 5 years. I went to New Jersey after that, ran a club for 15 years. I retired after the 15 years in New Jersey and kept my father full-time. He had Alzheimer's and dementia, so I stayed with him full-time for the next 4 years. And then the opportunity presented itself last year to be a volunteer assistant across the street from where I was living at the State College of Florida in Bradenton. And that's how I ended up becoming the head coach this year here at the State College of Florida, as the lady that was running it, Betsy Negerson McCormick, who was an amazing woman, an amazing player, won a couple Grand Slams. She was looking to... had other things that she needed to take care of, and she asked me if I would step in, and I volunteered.
Well, I've known Betsy. I used to be in the JC College coaching world myself, and it's got to be a great addition to the program over there. What's it like having Betsy around as an advisor?
She's an amazing woman. She has a great heart. She's a great spirit. The girls all love her. We all love her. Anytime she comes around, she's very constructive and gives out very insightful information with her vast experience of not only playing but coaching ability. And that's you can't really describe how much that would be worth at many programs. So to have someone like that at a junior college level is just invaluable. She's an amazing woman.
Coach, this is your first year at State College, but not your first year coaching college tennis. What was a big change for you in coming in this first year?
When I first started coaching college tennis, I was in my early 20s. I believe I was around 21 is when I became an assistant, and I was actually a head coach at age 24, so I was fairly young at the time. I took a job at Louisiana Tech, and it was a different kind of a program back then, of course, even with the money you have in the programs back then versus the money that you have in programs today. And I was coaching men and women at that time and pulled in a double role, which is very time-consuming. You have to recruit for two different teams. I did have an assistant. But still, you're doing a lot of the work, a majority of the work. And the difference would be for me is coaching only one team, as in just the women's program here versus there. I would honestly tell you I was a little more involved with the men there. I did travel with women and run practices. I did have an assistant that did some of the traveling and some of the coaching. But after being out of it for about 20 years, I think that the times have changed enough that I had to have a learning curve this year a little from the beginning to the end as to the way I would relate with the girls, the women on the team, and how to get my point across. And there's certain ways I think you need to learn to do that when you're dealing with women versus men. And I think by the end of the year I was getting that.
The State College of Florida, you're actually located, and help me understand this, you're in Sarasota, but right real close to Bradenton. How does that work, Coach?
Well, yeah, we're actually a tiny bit, we're actually in Bradenton. We're very close to Sarasota. We're about 10 minutes from downtown Sarasota, 10 or 12 minutes. We're located 7 minutes from the airport. We are actually three blocks from the world-renowned, used to be the Nick Bollettieri Tennis Academy, but now it's called the IMG Academies. And we're located only 15 minutes from the beach. We have beautiful weather here. We're in a tennis mecca. There's a lot of tennis in the area. So for playing and developmental purposes for the girls on the team and recruiting, that's a good thing. So we're in a great location as far as the junior college itself is.
Now, how big is the State College of Florida there in Sarasota?
Okay. We have 9,000 students. Any year could be a couple hundred less, a couple hundred more, but we hover right around 9,000 students. And we have expanded. We've added two new buildings. Actually, our tennis center, our tennis courts are brand new. They were just constructed and finished last summer, a brand new tennis complex. So 9,000 students and hopefully still growing. We're a school that's been here a long time, but we're still looking to continue to grow the school.
Now, your State College of Florida is a two-year program. You participate in the NJCAA. Coach, a lot of your kids, are they kids that can't make it at the Division I level, or do they just need some more experience?
No. The first question was, can they not make it at the Division I level? No, absolutely. Every kid on my team is a Division I player. There are scholarships out there that will be offered to my kids. We have a very good program, a well-developed program. We've only been in existence for 5 years, and all 5 years we have gone to the national championships, and three out of those 5 years we actually won the state regional championships. So the players on this team all will get offers and receive offers and be able to go to Division I school. We actually, the athletic department itself has about an 80% cumulative transfer rate for the athletes. So that's, a really good number. Where they go to four-year schools after they complete their eligibility here at our junior college. And then as far as the second part of your question goes, as far as developmental ability, I don't think it hurts for some players to come in and look to be developed at a junior college level, because sometimes there are little things in their game that's missing. And if you get at the right program and work with the right coaches, and we do develop girls here. We're looking to develop and continue to help them build their game. So that's something that I talk to my recruits about. So, yeah, I believe we definitely have Division I players, and we're looking to build Division I contacts so that we can place these players on once they leave.
Hey, Coach, those new courts, how many courts did you end up with?
Well, they built us six brand new ones, which in junior college and in Division I, you You need six. You play six singles matches for us, and we all play three doubles matches. So that worked out perfect. On the team, we have anywhere from 8 to 10 players, so that gives us enough courts to play singles or doubles on. And sometimes we have scrimmages with other academies in the area. Even though we're a junior college, we can do that as long as we put it on the schedule and say we're scrimmaging, and which we do, and that's all legal. So that gives us the opportunity to, you know, get a little competition in, and gives us enough courts to have those matches here and host them here.
Coach, now you had a very successful season. As you mentioned, you were the state champion there in Florida. Florida typically is one of the toughest regions in the NJCAA tournament. How was the Florida region this year?
Okay, well, the Florida region, we did great at the Nationals. We had three teams finish in the top five teams. We finished third, Broward College and the Jacksonville State College tied for fourth, so they finished actually fourth and fifth. So three of our teams, which are only six in our conference or region, finished in the top five teams in the nation this year. So we had an outstanding year.
Hey, Coach, do you play all of the schools that are in Florida, the community college schools?
We play the ones that have tennis. Yes, we do for junior college. We haven't lost to a team in Florida junior college since I believe it was March or April of last year. So it's been – this year we were undefeated against the teams in Florida. And but, yeah, we do play as many schools in Florida, and, yes, we play all the junior colleges.
Hey, Coach, I noticed that your schedule that you have several interdivision play matches. You'll play Division IIs. You'll play Division NAI divisions, you'll play Division I schools if you need to. Is that important to your program?
Well, it's very important. Yes, when you deal with recruits and you can talk to the better players, and you're trying, of course, to recruit the best players you possibly can, academically as well as athletically. And that's very important to be able to let them know that you can and will play some Division II or Division III, and hopefully a Division I or II. The toughest part about that is, as you're aware, and I'm sure some of your other guests have mentioned, is that when you're a Division I team and Division II and Division III, you have an X amount of dates that you can participate against outside competition. So they usually look to compete against mostly teams that would benefit them as a team, whereas if they put us on their schedule, which normally they won't put us as a real match. It'll usually be a scrimmage. But if they do that, for us, that's a huge benefit just to be able to play them. And it also gives them an opportunity, if they do it at certain times, to see where their team is at, where their players are at. So we definitely look forward to playing a Rollins or a Florida Southern or other schools in the state. And maybe, hopefully, next year we can get another couple Division I schools on our program.
Now, the NJCAA has made an attempt in the last 10 to 15 years to limit the number of internationals that have participated on their teams. Your roster is loaded with Florida kids, Coach. Do these kids come from academies? Are they local high school kids? Where do you get them from?
Well, this team that we have this year, and first let's speak towards the NJCAA limiting the internationals. That is very correct as to what you just stated, although – this year, they had just passed this in May, that they are now going to allow teams to recruit as many international players. There will be no limit on international players to participate on junior college teams throughout the nation now.
Wow.
So that's a huge change when it comes to financial money that will be put into tennis programs throughout this country, because no matter definitely when you're dealing with out-of-state or international players, there's a bigger cost to that than there always is with an in-state or a United States player, because that out-of-state tuition for us is really big. So there's going to be a huge expenditure if the schools are willing to put it in, and there will be some that will, and then there will be some that will maintain the status quo. Now, the status quo is, as you had said, they limited us to two international players this year. Depending on, there was a plus or minus which meant that if they had lived here for 3 years and graduated from high school or gone to high school here for 3 years, they actually could be counted as a player from the United States, as a citizen of the United States. You did not count them as an international player. So there were some teams out there that we played against from junior college that had six or seven international players on their teams. And to me, that was very eye-opening when I saw that. And there was a huge difference in the level of competition when we ended up participating against that team. It was very huge. So, yeah, we last year we went to the sectionals over in Orlando to recruit players, and that's where a couple of our girls came from. And then there was a hometown girl that I had worked with for a couple of years before I accepted the job here. She decided to attend here, so we were very blessed and lucky that we were able to get some talent from within the state, because as you originally had said, did these girls not qualify for Division I? No, they really do. It's just that sometimes you catch one that's looking for a little more mentorship. They need a little more grooming. They want to stay a little closer to home, and we can offer that, all those advantages to a lot of the players in the state of Florida.
And Coach, do you personally work out with the girls each week, or do you have some coaches to help you out with that?
Well, I myself do not play. The reason being I was in it for 45 years, and I played reasonably competitive for about 35 of those 45 years. So tennis will take its toll on your joints and your body. That being said, I was still playing up until about a year and a half to 2 years ago. I broke both of my elbows in a bicycle wreck. So to make a long story short, I don't participate too much. I do hit with the girls a little bit. I won't play matches or go out and compete. But this year, I was very fortunate. We have the money, and we have a lot of coaches here. I had two full-time assistant coaches, and I had a volunteer assistant coach. My two assistant coaches had a great background in tennis. One of them was top 30 in singles in the nation and number one in doubles, and also had a scholarship at University of Maryland. And the other player had played Division III and was an excellent player, all-conference in Division III. So very fortunate there. And then I also got lucky and got a volunteer assistant who had won three national championships as a junior college coach coming out of Kansas. So I was very fortunate. We had four coaches and only seven girls on the team. So wow. Each girl had more than one coach, basically every – you know, almost a coach per player, kind of. So, and with Betsy around sometimes, it was amazing what we could get done with players.
Coach, that trip out to Tucson, that's quite the reward for your girls to participate in that tournament, and this was your first experience out there. What did you think of the event?
I thought it was a well-run event. The weather, of course, is a little different. It's a lot of dry heat there. I think we had beautiful weather, though. I think we have 1 or 2 days in the 80s. Most of the time it was high 70s, very low 80s. Of course, with the dry heat, no humidity, I really thought it was excellent. I had no problems or saw no problems with any girls cramping or running into a heat problem there. The facility that we played at was a public facility, which had 30 tennis courts. So they had definitely a number of courts that the tournament could be run on, and it was run very efficiently. The hotel we stayed in was at the Hilton, which was within a 5-block walking distance of the courts. So we were able to actually get up and walk to the courts and walk back in the evenings if we desired to do that. And most of the days, the tournament would start at 7:30 and would usually be done by about, I would say, 3 o'clock every day, but maybe the first day or the second day. Other than that, the last 3 days, which would have been the quarters, semis, and finals, we were pretty much out of there by 1 or 1:30 every day. So beautiful area, beautiful place, easy to fly into, easy to fly out of. Give it a high recommendation even to visit. We took the girls to the mountains. They wandered around the mountains a little bit and rode a tram, and they really loved it. It was the first time for one of them ever to see a mountain. So that was a great experience. And when you can offer new experiences to your players and go have fun and see something new, that's really a plus to your team.
Now, Coach, this is a unique event. They flight each of the draws, six singles flights, three doubles flights, and you play for a point each time that you participate to eventually get a team champion. Is that correct?
That is true. When the first round of every division counted 2 points, and then after that, every round counted 1 point. That's exactly correct, and everything is flighted, so all the number ones in the country played in a number one draw, and that went all the way down to number six, and the same thing happened in doubles. Number one, two, and three were all in their separate divisions, so you actually crown a national champion for every flight of singles and every flight of doubles, and you come out with a placement of number one through, we had 27 teams this year, so 1 through 27 finishes in the team competition.
Yeah, I like that event because no matter where you're from or what school you participate with, you've got a chance to award your team some points and get a place finish.
Yeah, and you know what, I like the idea too, because then, as you know, there's only going to be one team that's a national champion. But you also, there are at least 12 opportunities because singles would be six, and then in the doubles you would have two players in each division. So you could actually have 12 different national champions if that ever worked out that way. So there's a lot of opportunities for players to become noticed and to gain recognition and to get a little to spread the wealth around, I guess you could say, or to spread the glory around with those players. Yeah.
Sure, sure. Now, typically that tournament starts on Sunday with any kind of makeup matches they've got to get to the main draw. Coach, did you get all your seeded players in to the main draw there for Monday play?
Yeah, what happens is the 27 teams, there's a 32 draw, so with 27 teams, all the players that got in from every team, so no matter what your team finished, as long as you were the regional champion, we get three teams in from the state of Florida. Other regions got two teams in. So that being said, it added up to 27 teams. So every team that brought six players and three doubles teams, all of them got into the main draw, which did start on Monday morning at 7:30.
Wow. Now, Coach, that's about a 4 to 5 day tournament. First couple of days go all right. Then the third day, fourth day, you start to see some separation of the teams. What day was the most difficult for your team?
Well, the most difficult day would have been the quarterfinals. ASA, which is a team out of New York City, Tyler, Texas, which, of course, is from Tyler, and then our team, which was the State College of Florida, in the quarterfinals, which would have been the last eight players in singles and the last eight teams in doubles at every division, we had all of our teams in the quarterfinals. So all of my players, all of their players were all in. So we were all tied at that point with the point totals. And that was the toughest day. We dropped three matches that day, so we won six and lost three matches. And Tyler won every match they played, and ASA, I believe, won every match they played. So there was a difference of 3 points at that time going into the semifinals, which would, of course, determine who was going to be pretty much the national champion, because by the time the finals came around, it became fairly apparent that ASA was going to win that national championship. But, yeah, the quarterfinals was a difficult day. We lost three-set matches, and we had opportunities to win two out of the three. And as the ball bounces, sometimes it just doesn't bounce your way, and didn't bounce our way that day.
And we had Coach Brian Slack on our show early in the year. He's a second, third-year coach up there at ASA that has really turned that program around and done some good things. Were they as tough as in person as they were on paper, Coach?
Well, from the inception of their program, I believe, if I'm pretty correct on this, the 4 years ago they were third in the nation. The next year they were second in the nation. They won the national championship last year, and they did win the national championship this year. They've had an incredible run. They have an incredible program. They had nine girls there. They won every point possible at the national championship, and I'm pretty sure that's probably never been done. So they won 1 through 6 in singles, and they won 1 through 3 in doubles. And like you just said, yeah, they were pretty tough in person as they were on paper. probably tougher because on paper you always think you can beat them, but when you get out there and you start seeing what they have, as I had said a little earlier in our conversation, I believe by the quarterfinals and definitely by the semis, I don't think there was many questions in at least the coaches' heads as to where pretty much where the teams were going to finish or, you know, how that was going to end up, because that was one of the most dominant performances I've ever seen at any team event in my lifetime.
Wow. And Coach Slack's done a good job up there, and they get rewarded for their hard work. I had a rumor from Coach Slack that he might be moving to Florida. Have you heard anything about that, Coach?
Well, from what I understand, I don't know that it's a move. I'm not really sure how they're going to do that. I mean, let's just say this. From what I understand, they could still potentially have a team in New York City and a team in Miami. They are opening another junior college in Miami, which with the NJCAA rules, they can have a junior college in, I guess, as many states as you would like. So with the funding that they have, it appears that they will operate a tennis team out of New York City next year and a tennis team out of Miami, Florida next year. So that's going to make it very tough for most of the other teams in the country with the job that he has done and the job that he is doing at this point. So we're really going to have to get on the ball to try and get to the level that he has brought this junior college tennis up to.
Now, well, Coach, that's what I love about JC Tennis. You can turn any program around in 2 years.
That's so true. Absolutely. It's just getting out and hitting the right recruits and putting yourself out there, being able to have the connections. And, you know, you can actually do that in Division I, which I have seen and did a little bit myself back in the day. It really depends on the resources a little bit of the school and then what you're able to offer and how you're able to do it. So, yeah, he's done an excellent job. We can change things around with the right one or two recruits. Anyone could become very competitive next year. So we're all looking to get some great recruits, and I lose two out of my top six, so I'm looking to get two or three extra players in that can come in and play a little higher or make us as depth-wise as we can be, and then we'll compete as best we can, and hopefully, but yeah, you can definitely turn it around, so hopefully he won't be able to make that big of a splash his first year in Miami, but if he moves his whole team down there, then since they were so dominant at the Nationals, I'm not really sure how many how many he's moving off the team, but I think there was at least four or five new faces on that team, which means if they're all back next year, they're going to be pretty tough.
Yeah, they are tough under Coach Slack. Coach, you said that you lose two. Have you already got those two replaced, or are you still recruiting?
I do have – I had a girl that's a local girl that was on the team this year. She was redshirted. She definitely will come in and play at the top of the lineup. She'll be competing for one of those top spots. And then I have another girl who is a local girl who will also add to the depth of the team. She's a very good player. I'm looking at her maybe to come in and be competitive at the 3-4-ish spot. And then I have a girl coming – as soon as the, you know, you never know this, but the offer's there, the papers are getting sent, and she said, okay, she's an international girl. She's been as high as top 900 WTA, and if I can get her in, then hopefully she'll be right at the top of the lineup. So I'm hoping to be as good, if not better, next year than I was this year, which I'm still not certain that would compete with Brian at ASA.
Well, Coach, you've got a lot of resources there in Florida with all the academies abound. Do these academies help you out?
Well, with the academies, yes, absolutely. Like I had said, we scrimmage them occasionally. But the main thing with a lot of these academy players, and I know that you know this, having the background in tennis and have spoken with so many coaches, that a lot of academies are going to try and promote their players to Division I, which would sell them better, because then they can talk to the parents and say, hey, look, if your daughter or son comes here and as a freshman or ninth grader or sophomore, by the time they're a senior, we have placed X amount of players to Division One, and so they're all looking to do what they can to promote and sell their programs, and I get that and I understand that, but I do have plenty of contacts in the area. It's just finding the right players. That's really what it comes down to. That, like you had said originally, I think earlier in our conversation, that maybe the niche is there for they would like to stay a little local. Maybe they would like to be here for 1 year and then transfer, which you can do. So you have to kind of hit or miss in that situation occasionally.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of luck involved out recruiting your other JC schools there in Florida. But it seems to be growing there in Florida, that tennis, that JC tennis.
Yeah, well, as you had said, we've been very competitive. This is the most competitive that I've seen it in, I guess, maybe 2 or 3 years. I only started watching it a little 3 years ago, and then last year we finished eighth. And actually last year we won the state regional championships, but when we went to nationals, we ended up finishing eighth, and the other two schools finished, I believe, maybe fourth and fifth or fourth and sixth. So, but again, as you know, sometimes it's the luck of the draw. It just really depends on how the competition comes out. But Florida, with the competition that we have in Florida and the tennis players, as you know, Florida is a mecca for tennis, and so is California and Texas and some of these places where you're going to find unreal tennis players. And sometimes it's just going out and finding getting out there and getting them and finding them and looking for them. So we're very competitive, and our team alone this year we ended up winning 14 matches, which was the most wins at the school for a team in the 5-year period. But 9 out of the 14 teams we beat were ranked in the top 10 in the nation. And 3 of those teams we beat twice, and they were from the state of Florida. So 6 of those 6 of those wins came against teams that finished actually in the top 5 of the nation. 4 of those wins came against 2 teams that finished in the top 5 of the nation. So it is very tough in Florida. Let me tell you, it's a dog-eat-dog world down here.
Yeah, and that being kind of a niche market there at the JC level, to get these kids to come in and participate for 2 years, it is a great sell. I mean, they can come in for 2 years, compete at a high level, and then transfer off to Division One schools or even Division Two. It doesn't really matter as long as they get their 4 years of education paid for. You've got to be recruiting some of the top JC hopefuls there in the state now.
Well, as far as in the state here with players that I'm looking at to recruit, I honestly, it's kind of funny, but I had most of my recruiting done by February or March of this year, so I really didn't even go to some of the sectional tournaments at this point, because if their team, which it looks like I'll have this team, if they even return next year, I will return 5 out of my top 8 players. So if I end up doing that next year, I would need to go and get a couple, maybe 3. So each year is a little different. As I said earlier, not sure many people know this, but at a junior college, if you come in as a qualifier, which means that you qualify to play at a Division One school grade-wise, academically-wise, and you were cleared by the NCAA clearinghouse, you could actually leave here after the first year and go to a Division One school. So this could just be a small stepping stone to get your feet wet, come in and get some grades, and then take those grades and transfer to a Division One school, get your name out in the – maybe you didn't get that offer you were looking for, and so you come here and you end up ranked in the top 5-6 players in the nation, and then all of a sudden you have 15 to 20 schools talking to you about coming to their school on a full scholarship to play Division One. So, but yeah, that's the way so far, and I'm sure that I'll be looking at more junior colleges. I can tell you this. I sent out and spoke with over 50 – academies and coaches scouring the state and some across the nation for players, and it's very difficult to find a player even when you're doing that and you have friends out there.
Yeah, on our side, Coach, it makes perfect sense. I mean, you come in for a couple of years, you play. If you go to a Division One school, you may sit on the bench and not get to play hardly at all. You're really looking for some competitive players that want that second chance, aren't you?
Well, that's what I try to tell players, too, occasionally. You know, if they're looking to go to a Division I school, I'm sure you're aware of this. The Division I's, most of them, if they fully fund them, they have 8 full scholarships. Now, what that does is it does give them depth, But if you're going to be 7 and 8 on those programs, and you're, like you had just mentioned, and you're going to sit the bench, I don't know many players that really want to go sit the bench for a freshman or sophomore year and then maybe play when they're junior, senior. And that's happening in all the sports in the country. You see that in basketball and football and baseball, and nobody really wants to go sit the bench. They all want to compete and play. So if you can offer a program and a quality program like the State College of Florida has here in Bradenton, competitively and with the coaching that we have with four coaches, as I said, for 7 players, then you're looking to get those players that maybe would be able to get that scholarship to a Division I team. But if they really want to play and play at a good level, this would be a great stepping stone for those players to come to, absolutely.
Now, as I understand it, Coach, there are no men's community college teams in Florida. Is that still the case?
It's funny. I was talking to Brian at the Nationals, and we were discussing starting men's tennis. He would like to come down and start a men's tennis team here in Florida. And I have spoken to my athletic director before we had gone to Nationals a little bit, and I had brought up that topic, and he has an interest in it. And again, I go back to how much money, you know, we're a nonprofit junior college, and there are some for-profit junior colleges, but us being a nonprofit junior college, it depends on where the money and the resources are allocated, because we are very academic here. We have very good GPAs as far as the overall school, and especially with our athletics here. We have very good GPAs with our athletics. Our team, just for tennis, has maintained over a 3.25 GPA for the 5 years. And for 4 years in a row, the athletic department here, for every sport that we have, has maintained over a 3.0 GPA for the last 4 years for athletics. So we have a demanding academic program. We offer great classes. It's a very good thing with the professors, small classes. And so men's tennis, yeah, would I like to do that? I think that'd be great. I'm not sure how many schools would follow suit. I know that Matt, who is our athletic director, Matt Ennis, has brought that up before with some of the other athletic directors. But again, I'm not sure what the reception is, because that has to go to presidents and boards, and you got to look to start to say, where's that money going to come from? So that, I think that's always going to be a question here.
So, Coach, in your first year, how many national champions did you end up with? How many All-Americans? Any academic All-Americans, Coach?
Okay, well, here's what ended up happening. We never got to the end of the story about the national championship.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's okay. I had my number 6 singles player get to the finals of the national championships at number 6, and I had my number 2 team get to the finals of the national championships at number 2 doubles. Other than that, there was Tyler and I believe one other program, and I think it was, I want to say, Seminole State out of Texas. I don't want to be held to that, but I believe that was the other team. Other than that, ASA was in every finals, and ASA won every final, every match. They dominated all 6 singles and dominated all 3 doubles finals. So as far as All-Americans go, you either have to end up being ranked, I think, in the top 10 players, or I believe the winners of every division and the winners of doubles become All-Americans. So every player off ASA's team who participated were All-Americans. And I believe my number 1 singles player, who went in ranked 6th in the nation, will probably come out as an All-American. We had, as far as academics go, I can't give you that yet. We just finished school last week, but notoriously we have always had at least 5 or 6 of our players make the all-state academic, all-conference academic, and then we usually end up having at least 1 who is a All-American academically a player. So I can't give you the answers yet, but, you know, maybe sometime later on I can get you that information.
Sure, Coach. Now, let's change gears just a little bit here before we move back into some college tennis. You've had professional teaching experience, Coach.
Yeah. As far as my ability or where I've coached, I worked with Nick for 5 years. A lot of the players at that time, and this was many years ago, we had the number 1 ranked national U.S. players in the 12s, 14s, 16s, and 18s training there. We also had 3 of the top 5 European juniors. We had the number two person from Japan. We had a ridiculous group of kids there training, and at that level, pushing each other to become better. We had unbelievable coaches there at the time, which were really, really great coaches. That really helped me as far as being a better coach and learning how to coach even more in more areas. I feel like that kind of gave me a master's degree. When you go and work with someone who has the stature of Nick Bollettieri, and then his full-time coaches who had been there for so long, Jose Lambert or Chip Brooks or Gabriel Emilio, these people, just hanging around them. I used to go sometimes and just sit there and watch them coach if I had any spare time, because they were just amazing coaches, knowing exactly what they were trying to accomplish and how they were going to get it done and what they were doing. And I learned so much from Nick that, I can't even, you know, again, it's something that you can't pay the money to go get, because I was very fortunate and lucky to be able to be there for the 5 years. Then I was able to travel a little on the pro tour with Mark Knowles, who ended up becoming number one in the world in doubles, and to get out there and to see it at that level. A lot of people think it's all glamour and glory. It is if you're looking at the tournaments on TV, where it's the U.S. Open or Wimbledon or a Grand Slam. But when you're first starting off and first digging in and doing those things, let me tell you, some of the places that you go, you pretty much wouldn't want to be there now. There's no doubt about it.
Coach, we've had a little bit of a drought in the American tennis system. When I grew up as a kid, we got on TV, we got to watch tons of Americans playing tennis. Now, with the exception of Isner, most of our guys are ranked outside the top 50. Then we've got on the women's side, without Serena Williams, we're in a serious funk. You being working with all those pros and the academy kids out there in Florida, what do you think is the main reason we're facing a glut here?
Well, I would say that from what I can see in a lot of different areas, there's a little bit of a softness in the United States as far as the kids themselves a little bit. I think there's a lot of coaches out there, probably a lot more coaches than you actually would want to be out there. And a lot of times coaches want to own and take possession, and you know, they want to have that player all to themselves, which is not allowing that player the benefit of developing from the expertise of many different coaches, because there's usually not one coach who can develop a player. It's usually a conglomerate of coaches, such as when Venus and Serena were coming up, you could ask their father, and he would tell you that they would go to Rick Macy for this, they would go to Nick for this, they would go to somebody else for this. And so that could be one for the serve, one for the ground strokes, one for the volleys. Maybe they even had a psychological coach. So today, another thing that's really, I believe I see out there more of, is parents want their kids to win right off the bat. And when that happens, there's a lot of pressure put on the kids. There's a lot of pressure put on the coaches. And that being said, the kids themselves end up usually being pushed and overplayed and injured. I've seen kids who have braces on their knees or, you know, their elbows, and they're 11 years old or 12 years old. And I just flabbergasted when I see things like that going on. And the other thing is about winning. If I'm a parent and I don't know a whole lot about tennis, if my son or daughter is playing with 9, 10, 11, or 12-year-olds and they start to win and my kid isn't winning, well, a lot of times it's the coach's fault and they change coaches. And then if that coach doesn't win, they change coaches. And so the stability of that is very difficult. And I believe that we do a poor job scouting the United States for talent and looking for the right players that we can groom. A lot of international countries scour their youth, and they will go watch and take some of them and make offers and do things. And maybe we're handicapped again by the coaches who want to own them, because regretfully a lot of them see them as their money bag. You know, oh, I've got a kid, I can keep him for 4 years, I'm going to get paid $80,000 to $100,000 a year to train this kid. That's a sad situation from my point of view. I never did that, and I don't even believe in that. I don't even know how people can get involved in that. But I see some of that going on out there. And so So I'm a little leery as to what we have coming up. I don't see any real men's players or women's players that I would say to you that I see in the next 3 years or 4 years winning a Grand Slam. I'm just like you. When I look at the men's tennis, I'm not seeing anybody who I feel has that game that's going to step up and win a Wimbledon or a U.S. Open. And in the women's, you know, maybe in 3 or 4 years, you might have someone developing through the ranks. I mean, there's a couple coming up there now, and it's really just going to depend on what happens the next 2 or 3 years. There's a Coco Vandeweghe, you know, that she was on the tour since the age of like 15 or 16, and now I believe she's around 21, but she's getting up there around 36, 37. She's a big girl, a strong girl. She's got a great background. Both parents were professional athletes. One was an Olympic swimmer. I believe her husband was a professional basketball coach, player. And so, you know, once you get that level, I think the best we can do is get them into the top 20, you know, around there, 2015. And then it really is a little bit of luck because there's only 4 Grand Slams won a year. And as far as being number one in the world, I'm just not certain we're creating or we've got the youth that has that desire and that, you know, those goals anymore. I'm not sure they're out there anymore. I'm just not really seeing that. That would be the best explanation I can give you. I'm not seeing the fight. I'm not seeing the kids that are going to work hard. Then you have no good player now is going to go to college. That's pretty much out. With the way they have changed the scoring system and the way that the IT has changed the Division I scoring system and the way that works, I said this to just my son today. We were talking about this, and I said, look, I said, when I can be the number one player on Southern Cal and – you know, or Oklahoma, who I think Oklahoma is currently ranked number one in the nation. I can be the number one player in Oklahoma. And if I can go play 4 matches in the first part of the year, now let's say we're not playing the top 10 teams or 20 teams. So we're pretty much going to blow those teams out. But a lot of teams have a good number one or two, somewhere right in. A lot of teams can get a one or two. So I'm out there, I'm competing. I've won the first set. I'm 3-1 up in the second, but the match ends. I don't even get credit for the win. So I could play 4 matches in a row and not even have a win, and the team could be 4-0, and I'm 0-0. So why would I go to college as looking to be a professional, looking to train at that level, when I'm not even going to get credit for matches played, and with no ad scoring and it being you know, 2 sets, 6 game set of doubles now, short setted. I'm not even getting to play probably more than 2 hours and 20 minutes, unless they want to practice me for 2 hours in the morning. So I just don't see any developmental way you can do it anymore, like a John McEnroe used to do or Todd Martin did when they went for a year or 2 years, or, you know, you get these players that came through and the NCAA championships, and they had to fight. Like if you played at Southern Cal number one back in that day when John McEnroe was playing, I remember watching him, and, you know, he played some unbelievable matches out there for that year. That's a grind. And I don't see that. I don't know why you'd want to be that great. So where's your groundwork to become to get players up into the top 50, 30, 20, 10, 5 in the world? Where is that being laid? The USTA? I don't see it in the USTA at this point. I see a lot of money being spent in the USTA, but right now I'm just not seeing a lot of results coming out of the USTA. So hopefully that'll change. Maybe they're doing something right and it's going to change in the next year, 2 years, or 3 years. But unless I'm wrong, I think our junior developmental coach for the USTA has changed at least a couple times in the last maybe 5 to 7 years. And I don't know that we've had much success with the juniors coming out, becoming any kind of players at all. So, yeah.
Coach, when you look at Nadal, when you look at Federer or Djokovic, even Murray, these are tremendous athletes. It just doesn't seem like we're getting the same caliber athlete in American tennis as they do internationally. Do you feel the same way?
I agree 100%. I think a lot of that has to deal with tennis as an individual sport, and you've got these team sports. And, you know, come on, if I'm a kid and I'm 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I love being around my friends. I love going out there and having fun. I love doing it together. And just imagine now you're 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, or 12, and you're out there with one coach sometimes, and it's your father, or, you know, it's someone you got to see every day for 2 hours in the afternoon. You don't get to go play with your friends. I definitely see that as a detriment to the sport. I definitely think we are not getting the best athletes. And I also would have to say, I got to throw this in, it seems to be that there's a lot of dishonesty in the line calls out there. There seems to be more cheating now than I've seen in the past ever in the college matches and in junior tennis. I ran a club for 15 years, and I had 30-plus tournaments a year at my club, and the cheating that would go on sometimes was, I just ain't even, it's hard to even talk about. And so it's a sport where I can be the best player and not win. I can go out there and be a great athlete and get cheated out of it. So I pretty much soon learned that, hey, in other sports, there's officials that make the calls. Now, I may get a bad call, but it's somebody else making it. It's not the person I'm playing. Whereas in tennis, you go out there, and I saw players be ranked in the top 10 in the nation when my children were playing tennis, and legitimately they should have been anywhere from 40 to 70, but they had cheated their way into the top 10. And that's a sad thing.
Yeah, that really is. Now, Coach, you finished up your spring season. You're on to your fall season. What are you going to do this summer?
Well, for me this summer, I look to spend a little more time with my wife. Hopefully, tennis does take a little bit of time away. The practice is every afternoon, and my wife does work, so I usually get home around 6 or 6:30. So we have a little time together, but I'm looking forward to spending time with my wife and my family and visiting my daughter who lives in Mississippi, whose husband actually is the assistant tennis coach at Mississippi State, so there's a little tennis in the family. But, I'm looking forward to doing that, spending a little free time playing. I have a sport I play, and you may have heard of it. It's called pickleball. I'm not sure if you've heard of it.
Oh, I love
that.
But
So I'm into pickleball a little bit. I've been doing that for about 3 years. I can do that with my arms. I don't get tennis elbow at all. And it's actually a national sport. They have national championships in it. Not that I would really care that much about traveling to go play, but I did play tournaments, a couple here in Florida. I went to the regional championships and played, and there's some very good players out there. It was a lot of fun, and they're players that, you know, you can compete and make friends and get a good workout in. And so next year, I've already got my girls buying into playing pickleball, and we're going to use that
there
as a team building experience. So I'm always looking as to how players can bond and become more of a team, and so I think that's a great thing to do with tennis. And when I ran my club, going back to that about why we don't have as many players, it's very hard to get those kids together sometimes. But if you could do that, and what's even worse, just to throw this in, when you have a 12, 13, or 14-year-old that's really phenomenal, and they go play a 16, 17, and 18-year-old, and they by chance beat them, they usually don't want to hang out together. So it is very difficult to have your friends to be in your sport at that point. And sorry, I just had to throw that back in. That just popped into my brain. Because I've experienced that with some of the kids I used to coach when they were younger, and you would get adults to play them, and it's not like they can go off and eat dinner together afterwards or socialize. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to a little freedom and staying out of the sun a little bit. I've been in it, as I said, for so long that I got to keep my body out of it a little more. But I'm looking forward to have a little fun, a little free time.
And Coach, I often said that that tennis is an individual sport, that the players want to be on a team. And most of the other sports are team sports where everyone wants to be an individual. You kind of agree with that?
Yeah, I think I agree with the first part that tennis is individual. I think you can make it into a team when you get to a certain level. At high school, you know, you can have team building events. You can have fun. You can have traveling teams in the juniors if you really have the resources and can put that together and the parents trust you and you're at a club where that's possible. You can make anything fun. I mean, we do see sometimes in the other sports, and as an example, I would say that you can see some of the basketball teams out there, and it doesn't really matter which teams, but, you know, for example, there was a team this year, they had a great, great season, but you could kind of see that sometimes I'm going to get mine, and you know what I mean, the other guy's going to get his, and sometimes it's not really, really operating efficiently as a team, and that can happen in tennis. You know, sometimes in tennis, it's in doubles. If you're playing doubles and you want to be flashy and you want to look great, well, you know, you're not really probably going to do too well because you're not helping your partner. You're not setting them up to to get some of the wins, some of the putaways, and then it depends on your partner where they help try to set you up. So I do see that in some of those sports, that some of the team sports can become individual. But I hate to say this, but I think in our society today, I really believe that there's being more of an eye preached out there, and I'm not really sure that's going to benefit us in the long run, but I do see that, yeah.
Coach, I don't know how we're going to break that because, you know, growing up it was always we and now it's I. I just don't know how we're going to break that.
Well, you know, the only way to break it would be to start with a new generation, and same way in many areas of what's going on is to get them when they're younger, five, six, and seven, which the USDA and I guess has come out with the softball, and to get them at that age and really get them to understand it's a team thing, and to get kids together more and more of any ability, and get them out there and to play and to show that it's fun and have a little fun. Of course it's going to be competitive. If not, why are they keeping score? Of course it's going to be competitive. If not, why are there scholarships? You know, that's just the way it's going to always be. There always is going to be competition. But, you know, when the top, from the top down, and I mean, you know, in the United States, and I'm talking a little broadly here, but when the top down is preaching a little more about sometimes I and me and, you know, that doesn't bode well for the people that they're speaking to, and it needs to be a more of together in a team and some of those areas. And so as a coach, what I would say is we have to do a better job promoting great coaches, getting coaches to understand. I don't know that there are many things out there to, you know, there are areas where you're going to be taught to be how to be a coach and how to relate and how to do these things and how to team building experiences. I think they're there, but I'm not sure there's many administrators or many athletic directors or associate athletic directors or club managers that are looking at their tennis coaches or head pros or college coaches and saying, hey, what are you doing for the kids to build, to become a team, to understand about what's going to happen in the future, that, you know, tennis probably isn't their life and they need to develop character and morals and values, and can we do that as a team? And that's really something I'm trying to do here, is I want these girls to understand that there's a future and it's not probably going to be in tennis. I don't specifically look to bust anyone's bubble, but I'm more into the character, values, morals, and I would like to see good human beings come out of here. And if I can do that, I will feel like I'm successful, whether I finish in the top five in the nation or 50th in the nation, because I think that's really what our jobs as coaches is about to. And if I do that, then we will win. If I do the right things and I work with girls or guys or whoever the right way, we'll all be winners in the end. And that's something that I'm very keen on.
Yeah, I agree with that, Coach Smith. Coach, we've had a great day listening to you speak, listening to your talk about your team, and I want to wish you many future successes out there in Florida.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time, Jason.
Yeah, and have a
look
great summer, too, Coach.
Yep, look forward to talking to you anytime again. You have a great summer, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Clayton Smith. Clayton being the head coach at the State College of Florida there in Sarasota. The Manatees, as they're called, and you can tell that he's doing a wonderful job in getting that program carried on from Betsy Nagelson. What a great brain it's got to be to have around to pick out there. A little bit jealous. And I know that he's going to do a wonderful job. We'll keep track of him and his team in the coming years. I think that they might have a chance at one of those national championships as he moves forward through his time. And just grateful that we got to listen to him and his speaker this week. And I want to remind you that we'll be back next week at 1 o'clock Central Time. Still working on a guest there. I think I've got another JC coach coming in from Mesa, Arizona. So we'll be hearing about the men's national championship as well. And look forward to listening to him speak as well. So I want to wish you a great day. Get out there and hit some tennis balls if you can, if the weather provides for it. And we'll see you back here next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Warning. Orthopedic surgeons are seeing an increase in overuse injuries when young athletes perform the same repetitive stressful motions over and over. Pitching, tennis, weight training, even long swimming workouts can cause overuse trauma that may require surgery. If your kids play and train hard, visit orthoinfo.org or stopsportsinjuries.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine.